though it would be difficult to pretend that nothing had happened. Al-Anon rose silently, stretching his tall frame to relieve cramped muscles. The brothers rose with him and stood quietly as he looked down at them. Legends and myths that did not exist in yesterday's world will exist in tomorrow's. Things of evil, ruthless and cunning, after lying dormant for centuries, will now awaken. The shadow of the warlock lord begins to fall across the four lands. He trailed off abruptly. I did not mean to be harsh with you. He smiled gently, quite unexpectedly. But if this is the worst thing that happens in the days to come, you should be glad indeed. You are faced with a very real threat, not a fairy tale that can be laughed away. Nothing about any of this will be fair to you. You will learn much about life that you will not like. He paused, a tall gray shadow against the green of the distant hills, his robes gathered carefully about his gaunt frame. One great hand reached over to grip firmly Shay's lean shoulder, and for an instant bound them together as one person. Then he turned away and was gone. Chapter 3 Al-Anon's plan for further discussions at the inn did not work out. He left the brothers sitting in hushed conversation behind the inn and returned to his room. Shay and Flick finally went back to their chores and shortly thereafter were dispatched on an errand by their father that took them out of the vale to the north end of the valley. It was dark by the time they returned, and they hastened to the dining room, hoping to question the historian further. But he did not appear. They ate dinner hurriedly, unable to speak to each other about the afternoon while their father was present. After eating, they waited almost an hour, but still he did not appear, and eventually, long after their father had departed for the kitchen, they decided to go to Al-Anon's room. Flick was reluctant to go looking for the dark stranger, especially after his meeting with him on the Vale Road the previous night. But Shay was so insistent that at last his brother agreed to go along, hoping that there might be safety in numbers. When they reached his room, they found the door unlocked and the tall wanderer gone. The room looked as if no one had even used it recently. They made a hasty search of the inn and the surrounding premises, but Al-Anon was not to be found. At last they were forced to conclude that for some unknown reason he had departed from Shady Vale. Shay was openly angered that Al-Anon had left without even a parting word, yet at the same time he began to experience a growing apprehension that he was no longer under the historian's protective wing. Flick, on the other hand, was just as happy that the man was gone. As he sat with Shay in the tall, hard-backed chairs before the fire in the big lounge room of the inn, he tried to assure his brother that everything was working out for the best. He had never completely believed the historian's wild tale of the Northland Wars and the Sword of Shannara, he argued. And even if some of it were true, certainly the part about Shay's lineage and the threat from Brona was completely exaggerated. A ridiculous fairy tale. Shay listened in silence to Flick's muddled rationalization of the possibilities, offering only an occasional nod of acquiescence. His own thoughts concentrated on deciding what he should do next. He had serious doubts about the credibility of Al-Anon's tale. After all, what purpose did the historian have in coming to him in the first place? He had appeared conveniently, it seemed, to tell Shay about his strange background and to warn him that he was in danger, then had disappeared without a word about his own interest in this business. How could Shay be sure that Al-Anon had not come on some hidden purpose of his own, hoping to use the Veilman as his cat's paw? There were too many questions that he didn't have the answers to. Eventually, Flick grew tired of offering advice to the silent Shay and finally ceased to speak of the matter, slumping down in his chair and gazing resignedly into the crackling fire. Shay continued to ponder the details of Al-Anon's story, trying to decide what he should do now. But after an hour of quiet deliberation, he threw up his hands in disgust, feeling as confused as before. Stalking out of the lounge, he headed for his own room, the faithful Flick close behind. Neither felt inclined to discuss it further. Upon reaching their small bedroom in the east wing, Shay dropped into a chair in moody silence. Flick collapsed heavily on the bed and stared disinterestedly at the ceiling. The twin candles on the small bedside table cast a dim glow over the large room, and Flick soon found himself on the verge of drifting off to sleep. He hastily jerked awake and, stretching his hands above his head, encountered a long piece of folded paper, which had partially slipped down between the mattress and headboard. Curiously, he brought it around in front of his eyes and saw that it was addressed to Shay. "What's this?" he muttered, and tossed it across to his prostrate brother. Shay ripped open the sealed paper and hurriedly scanned it. He had scarcely begun before he let out a low whistle and leaped to his feet. Flick sat up quickly, realizing who must have left the note. "It's from Allenham," Shay confirmed his brother's suspicion. "Listen to this, Flick. 'I have no time to find you and explain matters further. Something of the greatest importance has occurred, and I must leave immediately. Perhaps even now I am too late. You must trust me and believe what I told you, even though I will not be able to return to the valley. You will not long be safe in Shady Vale, and you must be prepared to flee quickly. Should your safety be threatened, you will find shelter at Cullhaven in the forests of the Anar. I will send a friend to guide you. Place your trust in Balinor. Speak with no one of our meeting. The danger to you is extreme. In the pocket of your maroon travel cloak, I have placed a small pouch which contains 3 elf stones. They will provide you with guidance and protection when nothing else can. Be cautioned. They are for Shay alone and to be used only when all else fails. The sign of the skull will be your warning to flee. May luck be with you, my young friend, until we meet again." Shay looked excitedly at his brother, but the suspicious Flick shook his head in disbelief and frowned deeply. "I don't trust him. Whatever is he talking about anyway? Skulls and elf stones. I never even heard of a place called Cullhaven, and the Anar forests are miles from here. Days and days. I don't like it." "The stones," Shay exclaimed, and leaped for the traveling cloak which hung in a long corner closet. He rummaged through his clothes for several minutes while Flick watched anxiously, then carefully stepped back with a small leather pouch balanced gently in his right hand. He held it up and tested its weight, displaying it to his brother, and then hurried back to the bed and sat down. A moment later, he had the drawstrings open and was emptying the contents of the pouch into his open palm. 3 dark blue stones tumbled out, each the size of an average pebble, finely cut and glowing brightly in the faint candlelight. The brothers peered curiously at the stones, half expecting that they would immediately do something wondrous. But nothing happened. They lay motionless in Shay's palm, shimmering like small blue stars snatched from the night, so clear that it was almost possible to see through them, as if they were merely tinted glass. Finally, after Flick had summoned enough courage to touch one, Shay dropped them back into the pouch and stuffed it into his shirt pocket. "Well, he was right about the stones," ventured Shay a moment later. "Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe they're not elf stones," suggested Flick suspiciously. "How do you know? Ever seen one? What about the rest of the letter? I never heard of anyone named Balinor, and I never heard of Cullhaven. We ought to forget the whole business, especially that we ever saw Allenon." Shay nodded doubtfully, unable to answer his brother's questions. "Why should we worry now? All we have to do is to keep our eyes open for the sign of the skull, whatever that may be, or for Al-Anon's friend to appear. Maybe nothing will happen after all. Flick continued to voice his distrust of the letter and its author for several minutes more before losing interest. Both brothers were weary and decided to call it a night. As the candles were extinguished, Shay's last act was to place the pouch carefully beneath his pillow, where he could feel its small bulk pressing against the side of his face. No matter what Flick might think, he had resolved to keep the stones close at hand in the days ahead. The next day, it began to rain. Huge, towering black clouds rolled in from the north quite suddenly and settled over the entire valley, blotting out all traces of sun and sky as they released torrents of shattering rain, which swept through the tiny hamlet with unbelievable ferocity. All work in the fields came to an abrupt halt, and travel to and from the valley ceased entirely. First for one, then two, and finally 3 complete days. The downpour was a tremendous spectacle of blinding streaks of lightning lacing the darkly clouded sky and deeply rolling thunder breaking over the valley with earth-shaking blasts that followed one after the other and died into slower, more ominous, distant rumblings from somewhere beyond the blackness to the north. For the entire 3 days it rained, and the Vale people began to grow fearful that flash floods from the hills all about them would wash down with devastating effect on their small homes and unprotected fields. The men gathered daily in the Ohmsford Inn and chatted worriedly over their mugs of beer, casting apprehensive glances at the sheets of rain falling steadily beyond the dripping windows. The Ohmsford brothers watched in silence, listening to the conversation and scanning the worried faces of the anxious Vale men huddled together in small groups about the crowded lounge. At first they held out hope that the storm would pass over, but after 3 days there was still little sign of clearing in the weather. Near midday on the fourth day, the rain lessened from a steady downpour to a muggy drizzle mixed with heavy fog and a sticky, humid heat that left everyone thoroughly disgruntled and uncomfortable. The crowd at the inn began to thin out as the men left to return to their jobs, and soon Shay and Flick were occupied with repairs and general cleaning chores. The storm had smashed shutters and torn the wooden shingles from the roof, scattering them all about the surrounding premises. Large leaks had developed in the roof and walls of the inn wings, and the small tool shed in the rear of the Ohmsford property had been all but flattened by a falling elm, uprooted by the force of the storm. The young men spent several days patching up leaks, repairing the roof, and replacing lost or broken shingles and shutters. It was tedious work, and time dragged by slowly. After 10 days the rains ceased altogether, the huge clouds rolled on, and the dark sky cleared and brightened into a friendly light blue, streaked with trailing white clouds. The expected floods did not come, and as the Vale men returned to their fields, the warm sun reappeared and the land of the valley began to dry from soggy mud to solid earth, spattered here and there by small puddles of murky water that sat defiantly upon an always thirsty land. Eventually, even the puddles disappeared, and the valley was as it had been. The fury of the passing storm, only a dim memory. Shay and Flick, in the process of rebuilding the smashed tool shed, their other repair work on the inn complete, heard snatches of conversation from Valemen and inn guests about the heavy rain. No one could ever remember a storm of such ferocity at that particular time of the year in the Vale. It was equivalent to a winter windstorm, the kind that caught unsuspecting travelers in the great mountains to the north and swept them from the passes and the cliff trails, never to be seen again. Its sudden appearance caused everyone in the hamlet to pause and reflect once again on the continuing rumors of strange happenings far to the north. The brothers paid close attention to such talks, but they learned nothing of interest. Often they spoke quietly together about Al-Anon and the strange tale he had told them of Shay's heritage. A pragmatic Flick had long since dismissed the whole business as either foolishness or a bad joke. Shay listened tolerantly, though he was less willing than his brother to shrug the matter off. Yet while he was unwilling to dismiss the tale, he was, at the same time, unable to accept it. He felt there was too much still hidden from him, too much about Al-Anon that neither Flick nor he knew. Until he had all the facts, he was content to let the matter lie. He kept the pouch containing the elf stones close to him at all times. While Flick mumbled on, usually several times a day, about his foolishness in carrying the stones and believing that anything Al-Anon had told them was true, Shay carefully watched all strangers passing through the veil, eagerly perusing their belongings for any sign of a skull marking. But as time passed, he observed nothing and eventually felt obliged to scratch the whole matter off as an experience in the fine art of gullibility. Nothing occurred to change Shay's mind on the matter until one afternoon, more than 3 weeks after Al-Anon's abrupt departure. The brothers had been out all day cutting shingles for the inn roof, and it was almost evening by the time they returned. Their father was sitting in his favorite seat at the long kitchen counter when they entered, his broad face bent over a steaming plate of food. He greeted his sons with a wave of his hand. "A letter came for you while you were gone, Shay," he informed them, holding out a long, white, folded sheet of paper. "It's marked Lee." Shay let out an exclamation of surprise and reached eagerly for the letter. Flick groaned audibly. "I knew it. I knew it. It was too good to be true," he muttered. "The biggest wastrel in the entire Southland has decided it's time we suffered some more. Tear up the letter, Shay." But Shay had already opened the sealed sheet of paper and was scanning its contents, totally disregarding Flick's comments. The latter shrugged in disgust and collapsed on a stool next to his father, who had returned to his evening meal. "He wants to know where we've been hiding," laughed Shay. "He wants us to come see him as soon as we can." "Oh, sure," muttered Flick. "He's probably in trouble and needs someone to blame it on. Why don't we just jump off the nearest cliff? You remember what happened the last time Minion Lee invited us to visit? We were lost in the Black Oaks for days and nearly devoured by wolves. I'll never forget that little adventure. The Shades will get me before I accept another invitation from him." His brother laughed and clapped an arm around Flick's broad shoulders. "You are envious because Minion is the son of kings and able to live any way he chooses." "A kingdom the size of a puddle," was the quick retort. "And royal blood is cheap stuff these days. Look at your own—" He caught himself and clamped his mouth shut quickly. Both shot hurried glances at their father, but he apparently hadn't heard and was still absorbed in eating. Flig shrugged apologetically, and Shay smiled at his brother encouragingly. "There's a man in the inn looking for you, Shay," Curzat Ohmsford announced suddenly, looking up at him. "He mentioned that tall stranger that was here several weeks back when he asked for you. Never seen him before in the Vale. He's out in the main lounge now." Flick stood up slowly, fear gripping at him. Shay was momentarily caught off balance by the message, but motioned hurriedly to his brother, who was about to speak. If this new stranger were an enemy, he had to find out quickly. He clutched at his shirt pocket, reassuring himself that the elf stones were still there. "What does the man look like?" he asked quickly, unable to think of any other way of finding out about the skull mark. "Can't really say, son," was the muffled reply as his father continued to chew on his dinner, face bent to the plate. "He's wrapped in a long green forest cloak. Just rode in this afternoon. Beautiful horse. He was very anxious to find you. Better go see what he wants right away." "Did you see any markings?" asked the exasperated Flick. His father stopped chewing and looked up with a puzzled frown. "What are you talking about? Would you be satisfied if I presented you with a chalk drawing? What's wrong with you, anyway?"
"It's nothing, really," interjected Shay quickly. "Flick was just wondering if the man looked anything like Alanon. You remember?"
"Oh, yes," his father smiled knowingly as Flick suppressed a swallow of relief. "No, I didn't notice any real similarity, though this man is big, too. I did see a long scar running down the right cheek, probably from a knife cut." Shay nodded his thanks and quickly pulled Flick after him as he moved out to the hallway and started for the main lounge. They hurried to the wide double doors and halted breathlessly. Cautiously, Shay pushed one door open a crack and peered into the crowded lounge area. For a moment he saw nothing but the ordinary faces of the usual customers and average Vale travelers, but a moment later he started back and let the door swing shut as he faced the anxious Flick.
"He's out there, near the front corner by the fireplace. I can't tell who he is or what he looks like from here. He's wrapped in the green cloak, just as Father said. We've got to get closer."
"Out there?" gasped Flick. "Have you lost your mind? He would spot you in a second if he knows who he's looking for."
"Then you go," Shay ordered firmly. "Make some pretense of putting logs on the fire and get a quick look at him. See if he bears the markings of a skull."
Flick's eyes went wide, and he turned to escape, but Shay caught his arm and pulled him back, forcibly shoving him through the doors into the lounge and quickly ducking back out of sight. A moment later, he opened one door a crack and peeped out to see what was happening. He saw Flick move uncertainly across the room to the fireplace and begin to poke the glowing embers idly, finally adding another log from the woodbox. The Veilman was taking his time, apparently trying to get in a position where he could catch a glimpse of the man wrapped in the green cloak. The stranger was seated at a table several feet away from the fireplace, his back to Flick, but turned slightly toward the door behind which Shay had concealed himself. Suddenly, just as it appeared that Flick was ready to return, the stranger moved slightly in his seat and made a quick comment, and Flick went stiff. Shay saw his brother turn toward the stranger and reply, glancing hurriedly toward Shay's place of concealment. Shay slipped back further into the shadows of the hall and let the door swing shut. Somehow, they had given themselves away. As he pondered whether to flee, Flick abruptly pushed through the double doors, his face white with fear.
"He saw you at the door. The man has the eyes of a hawk. He told me to bring you out."
Shay thought a moment and finally nodded hopelessly. After all, where could they run to that they wouldn't be found in a matter of minutes?
"Maybe he doesn't know everything," he suggested, hopefully. "Maybe he thinks we know where Alanon has gone. Be careful what you tell him, Flick."
He led the way through the wide swinging doors and across the lounge to the table where the stranger sat. They stopped just behind him and waited, but without turning, he beckoned them to seats around the table with a sweep of his hand. They reluctantly obeyed the unspoken command, and the three sat in silence for a few moments, looking at one another. The stranger was a big man with a broad frame, though he did not have Alanon's height. The cloak covered all of his body, and only his head was visible to them. His features were rugged and strong, pleasant to the eye except for the dark scar that ran from the outside tip of the right eyebrow down across the cheek just above the mouth. The eyes seemed curiously mild to Shay as they studied the young Veilman, a hazel color that hinted at a gentleness beneath the hard exterior. The blonde hair was cut short and lay scattered loosely about the broad forehead and around the small ears. As Shay viewed the stranger, he found it hard to believe that this man could be the enemy Alanon had warned might come to the valley. Even Flick seemed relaxed in his presence.
There is no time for games, Shay, the newcomer spoke suddenly in a mild but weary voice. Your caution is well advised, but I am not a bearer of the skull mark. I'm a friend of Alanon. My name is Balinor. My father is Rul Buckhanna, the king of Callahorn. The brothers recognized his name instantly, but Shay was not taking any chances. How do I know that you are who you say you are? He demanded quickly. The stranger smiled. The same way I know you, Shay. By the three elf stones you carry in your shirt pocket. The elf stones given you by Alanon. The Veilman's startled nod was barely perceptible. Only someone sent by the tall historian could have known about the stones. He leaned forward cautiously. What has happened to Alanon? I cannot be sure, the big man replied softly. I have not seen nor heard from him in over 2 weeks. When I left him, he was traveling to Paranor. There was rumor of an attack against the keep. He was afraid for the safety of the sword. He sent me here to protect you. I would have reached you sooner, but I was delayed by the weather, and by those who sought to follow me to you. He paused and looked directly at Shay, his hazel eyes suddenly hard as they bored into the young man. Alanon revealed to you your true identity and told you of the danger you would someday face. Whether you believed him or not is of no consequence now. The time has come. You must flee the valley immediately.
Just pick up and leave? Exclaimed the astounded Shay. I can't do that.
You can, and you will if you wish to stay alive. The bearers of the skull suspect you are in the valley. In a day, perhaps two, they will find you. And that will be the end if you are still here. You must leave now. Travel quickly and lightly. Stick with trails you know and the shelter of the forest when you can. If you are forced to travel in the open, travel only by day when their power is weaker. Alanon has told you where you are to go, but you must trust to your own resourcefulness to get you there. The astonished Shay stared at the speaker for a moment and then turned to Flick, who was speechless at this new turn of events. How could the man expect him just to pack up and run? It was ridiculous. I have to leave. The stranger rose suddenly, his great cloak wrapped tightly about his broad frame. I would take you with me if I could, but I have been followed. Those who seek to destroy you will expect me to give you away eventually. I will serve you better as a decoy. Perhaps they will follow me still farther, and I will be able to give you a chance to slip away without being noticed. I will ride south for a while, and then swing back toward Cullhaven. We will meet again there. Remember what I said. Do not linger in the Vale. Flee now, tonight. Do as Alanon has said, and guard the elf stones with care. They are a powerful weapon. Shay and Flick rose with him and shook the extended hand, noticing for the first time that the exposed arm was covered with gleaming chainmail. Without further comment, Balinor moved swiftly across the room and disappeared through the front door into the night.
Well, now what?
Flick asked as he collapsed back into his seat.
How should I know? Replied Shay wearily. I'm no fortune teller. I don't have the vaguest idea if what he told us was the truth, any more than what Alanon said. If he is right, and I have an uneasy suspicion that there is at least some truth in what he says, then for the sake of everyone concerned, I've got to get out of the valley. If someone is after me, we cannot be sure that others, like yourself and father, won't be hurt if I stay.
He gazed despondently across the room, hopelessly entangled by the tales he had been told, unable to decide what his best move would be. Flick watched him silently, knowing he could not help, but sharing his brother's confusion and worry. Finally, he leaned across and put his hand on Shay's shoulder. "I'm going with you," he announced softly. Shay looked around at him, plainly startled.
"I can't have you doing that. Father would never understand. Besides, I may not be going anywhere."
"Remember what Al-Anon said. I'm in this with you," Flick insisted stubbornly. "Besides, you're my brother. I can't let you go alone."
Shay stared at him wonderingly, then nodded and smiled his thanks. "We'll talk about it later. At any rate, I can't leave until I decide where I am going and what I will need. If I even go. I've got to leave some kind of note for Father. I can't just walk out, despite what Al-Anon and Balinor think."
They left the table and retired to the kitchen for dinner. The remainder of the evening was spent restlessly wandering about the lounge and kitchen area, with several side trips to the sleeping quarters, where Shay rifled through his personal belongings, absently noting what he owned and setting aside stray items. Flick followed him about silently, unwilling to leave him alone, inwardly afraid that his brother might decide to depart for Cullhaven without telling him. He watched Shay push clothing and camping equipment into a leather pack, and when he asked his brother why he was packing, he was told that this was just a precaution in case he did have to flee suddenly. Shay assured him that he would not leave without telling him, but the reassurance did not make Flick any easier in his mind, and he watched Shay all the more closely. It was pitch black when Shay was awakened by the hand on his arm. He had been sleeping lightly, and the cold touch woke him instantly, his heart pounding. He struggled wildly, unable to see anything in the darkness, and his free hand reached out to clutch his unseen attacker. A quick hiss reached his ears, and abruptly he recognized Flick's broad features, vaguely outlined in the dim light of the cloud-masked stars, and a small crescent moon that shone through the curtained window. The fear eased, replaced by sudden relief at the familiar sight of his brother.
"Flick, you scared—"
His relief was cut short as Flick's strong hand clamped over his open mouth, and the warning hush sounded again. In the gloom, Shay could see deep lines of fear in his brother's face, the pale skin drawn tightly with the cold of the night air. He started up, but the strong arms holding him grasped him tighter and drew his face near tightly clenched lips.
"Don't speak," the whisper sounded in his ears, the voice trembling with terror. "The window. Quietly."
The hands loosened their grip and gently, hastily pulled him from the bed and down along the floor until both brothers were crouched breathlessly on the hard wooden planks deep within the shadows of the room. Then Shay crawled with Flick toward the partly open window, still crouching, not daring even to breathe. When they reached the wall, Flick pulled Shay to one side of the window with hands that were now shaking.
"Shay, by the building. Look."
Frightened beyond description, he raised his head to the windowsill and carefully peered over the wooden frame into the blackness beyond. He saw the creature almost immediately. A huge, terrible black shape stooped in a half-crouch as it crawled, dragging itself slowly through the shadows of the buildings across from the inn, its humped back covered by a cloak that rose and billowed softly as something beneath pushed and beat against it. The hideous rasping sound of its breathing was plainly audible even from that distance, and its feet emitted a curious scraping sound as it moved across the dark earth. Shay clutched the sill tightly, his eyes locked on the approaching creature, and in the instant before he ducked below the open window, he caught a clear glimpse of a silver pendant fashioned in the shape of a gleaming skull. Chapter 4
Shay collapsed wordlessly next to the dark form of his brother, and they sat huddled together in the blackness. They could hear the creature moving, the scraping sound growing louder as the seconds passed, and they were certain they had heeded Balinor's warning too late. They waited, not daring to speak, even to breathe, as they listened. Shay wanted to run, torn by the knowledge that the thing outside would kill him if it found him now, but afraid that if he moved, he would be heard and caught on the spot. Flick sat rigid beside him, shaking in the cool of the blowing night wind that whipped the curtains about the window frame. Suddenly they heard the sharp bark of a dog sound again and again, then shift to a hoarse growl of mingled fear and hatred. Cautiously, the brothers raised their heads above the windowsill and looked out, squinting in the dim light. The creature bearing the skull mark was crouched against the wall of the building directly across from their window. Some 10 feet away was a huge wolf dog, a hunter for one of the Veilmen, its white fangs bared and gleaming as it watched the intruder. The two shapes faced each other in the night shadows, the creature breathing in the same slow, rasping wheeze, and the dog growling low and snapping the air before it, inching forward in a half-crouch. Then with a snarl of rage, the big wolf dog sprang at the intruder, its jaws open and reaching for the blackened head. But the dog was caught suddenly in midair by a claw-like limb that whipped out from beneath the billowing cloak and jerked at the throat of the hapless animal, smashing him lifeless to the ground. It happened in an instant, and the brothers were so astonished that they almost forgot to duck down again to avoid being seen. A moment later they heard the strange scraping sound as the creature began to drag itself along the wall of the adjacent building. But the sound grew fainter and appeared to be moving away from the inn. Long moments passed as the brothers waited breathlessly in the shadows of the room, shivering uncontrollably. The night grew quiet around them, and they strained their ears for some indication of the creature's position. Eventually, Shay worked up enough courage to peer once more over the edge of the windowsill into the darkness beyond. By the time he ducked down again, the frightened Flick was ready to scramble for the nearest exit, but a hurried shake of Shay's head assured him that the creature was gone. He hastened back from the window to the warmth of his bed, but caught himself halfway under the covers as he saw Shay begin to dress hurriedly in the darkness. He tried to speak, but Shay raised a finger to his lips. Immediately, Flick began pulling on his own clothes. Whatever Shay had in mind, wherever he was going, Flick was determined to follow. When they were both dressed, Shay pulled his brother close and whispered softly in his ear. "Everyone in the Vale will be in danger as long as we remain. We must get out tonight, now. Are you determined to go with me?" Flick nodded emphatically, and Shay continued. "We'll go to the kitchen and pack some food to take with us. Just enough to get by on for a few days. I'll leave a note for Father there." Without another word, Shay picked up his small bundle of clothing from inside the closet and disappeared noiselessly into the pitch-black hallway that led to the kitchen. Flick hurriedly followed, groping his way from the bedroom behind his brother. It was impossible to see anything in the hallway, and it took them several minutes to feel their way along the walls and around the corners to the broad kitchen door. Once inside the kitchen, Shay lit a candle and motioned Flick over to the foodstuffs, while he scratched out a note for his father on a small sheet of paper and stuck it under a beer mug. Flick finished his job in a few minutes and came back to his brother, who quickly extinguished the small candle and moved to the rear door, where he stopped and turned. "Once we're outside, don't speak at all. Just follow me closely." Flick nodded doubtfully, more than a little concerned about what might be waiting for them beyond the closed door, waiting to rip out their throats as it had the wolf dogs a few minutes before. But there was no time for hesitation now, and Shay swung open the wooden door carefully and peered out into a brightly moonlit yard, bordered by heavy clumps of trees. A moment later he motioned to Flick, and they stepped cautiously from the building into the cool night air, closing the door carefully behind them.
It was brighter outside the building in the soft light of the moon and stars, and a quick glance revealed that no one was around. There was only an hour or two until dawn, when the hamlet would begin to awaken. The brothers paused next to the building as they listened for any sound that would warn of danger. Hearing nothing, Shay led the way across the yard, and they disappeared into the shadows of an adjacent hedgerow, Flick casting a last, wistful glance back at the home he might never see again. Shay silently picked his way through the buildings of the hamlet. The Veilman knew that the Skullbearer was uncertain who he was, or it would have caught them at the inn. But it was a good bet that the creature suspected he lived within the valley, and so had come into the sleeping town of Shady Vale on an exploratory search for the missing half-son of the House of Shannara. Shay ran back over the plan of travel he had hastily formed at the inn. If the enemy had discovered where he was, as Balinor had warned, then all the possible escape routes would be watched. Moreover, once they discovered he was missing, they would lose no time in tracking him down. He had to assume that there was more than one of these frightening creatures, and that they were probably watching the whole valley. Flick and he would have to seize the advantage of stealth and secrecy to get out of the valley and the country immediately surrounding it within the next day or so. That meant a forced march with very few hours' sleep. This would be tough enough, but the real problem was where they would flee. They had to have supplies within a few days, and a trip to the Anar would take weeks. The country beyond the Vale was unfamiliar to both brothers, except for a few well-traveled roads and hamlets that the Skullbearers would certainly be watching. Given their present situation, it would be impossible to do much more than choose a general direction. But which way should they run? Which direction would the prowling creatures least expect them to go? Shay considered the alternatives carefully, though he had already made up his mind. West of the Vale was open country except for a few villages, and if they went that way they would be moving away from the Anar. If they traveled south, they would eventually reach the comparative safety of the larger southland cities of Pia and Zolamok, where there were friends and relatives. But this was the logical route for them to take to escape the Skullbearers, and the creatures would be carefully watching roads south of the Vale. Moreover, the country beyond the Dalne forests was broad and open, offering little cover for the fugitives and promising a long journey to the cities, during which they could be easily caught and killed. North of the Vale and beyond the Dalne was a broad sweep of land encompassing the Rappahalidran River and the huge Rainbow Lake and miles of wild, unsettled land that led eventually to the Kingdom of Callahorn. The Skullbearers would have passed through it on their journey from the Northland. They would, in all likelihood, know it far better than the brothers and would be watching it closely if they suspected that Balinor had come to the Vale from Tirsis. The Anar lay northeast of the Vale, through miles and miles of the roughest, most treacherous country in all of the vast Southland. This direct route was the most dangerous one, but the one in which the enemy searchers would least expect him to run. It wound through murky forests, treacherous lowlands, hidden swamps, and any number of unknown dangers that claimed the lives of unwary travelers every year. But there was something else that lay east of the Dalne forests that even the Skullbearers could not know about. The safety of the Highlands of Lee. There the brothers could seek the aid of Minyan Lee, Shay's close friend, and, despite Flick's fears, the one person who might be able to show them a way through the dangerous lands that led to the Anar. For Shay, this seemed the only reasonable alternative. The brothers reached the southeast edge of town and halted breathlessly beside an old woodshed, their backs to the coarse boarding. Shay looked cautiously ahead. He had no idea where the prowling skull creature might be by this time. Everything was still hazy in the clouded moon glow of the dying night. Somewhere off to their left, several dogs barked furiously, and scattered lights appeared in the windows of nearby houses as sleepy owners peered out curiously into the blackness. Dawn was only a little over an hour away, and Shay knew they would have to chance discovery and run for the lip of the valley and the concealment of the Dulm forests. If they were still in the valley when it became light, the creature searching for them would see them climbing the slopes of the open hills, and they would be caught trying to escape. Shay clapped Flick on the back and nodded, breaking into a slow jog as he moved away from the shelter of the Vale homes into the heavy clumps of trees and brush that dotted the valley floor. The night was silent around them except for the muffled sound of their feet padding on the long grass that was wet with early morning dew. Leafy branches whipped at them as they ran, slapping their unprotected hands and faces in small, stinging swipes that left the dew clinging to their skin. They ran hurriedly for the gentle, brush-covered eastern slope of the vale, dodging in and out of the heavy oaks and hickories, bounding over loose nutshells and fallen twigs that were scattered beneath the wide limbs, ribbing the deep sky overhead. They reached the slope and scampered up the open grassland as quickly as their legs would carry them, not pausing to look back or even down in the darkness, but only ahead to the ground that rushed by them in sudden bounds and disappeared into the vale behind. Slipping frequently on the damp grass, they reached the lip of the vale, where their eyes were greeted with a clear view of the great valley walls to the east, studded with shapeless boulders and sparse shrubbery, looming like a great barrier to the world beyond. Shay was in excellent physical condition, and his light form flew across the uneven ground, moving agilely among the clumps of brush and small boulders that blocked his path. Flick followed doggedly, the stout muscles of his legs working tirelessly to keep his heavier frame even with the fleet figure ahead. Only once did he risk a quick glance back, and his eyes recorded only a blurred image of mingled treetops that rose above the now hidden town and were outlined in the glow of the fading night stars and clouded moon. He watched Shay run ahead of him, bounding lightly over small rises and scattered rocks, apparently intent on reaching the small wooded area near the base of the eastern slope of the valley, about a mile ahead. Flick's legs were beginning to tire, but his fear of the creature somewhere behind them kept him from lagging. He wondered what would happen to them now. Fugitives from the only home they had known, pursued by an incredibly vicious enemy that would snuff out their lives like a small candle's flame if they were caught. Where could they go that they wouldn't be found? For the first time since Al-Anon had departed, Flick wished fervently that the mysterious wanderer would reappear. The minutes passed quickly, and the small woods ahead grew closer as the brothers ran on wearily, silently through the chill night. No sound reached their ears. Nothing moved in the land ahead. It was as if they were the only living creatures in a vast arena, alone except for the watchful stars winking solemnly overhead in quiet contentment. The sky was growing lighter as the night came to a wistful close, and the vast audience above slowly disappeared one by one into the morning light. The brothers ran on, oblivious to everything but the need to run faster, to escape being caught in the revealing light of a sunrise only minutes away. When the runners finally reached the wooded area, they collapsed breathlessly on the twig-covered ground beneath a stand of tall hickories, their ears and hearts pounding wildly from the strain of running. They lay motionless for several minutes, breathing heavily in the stillness. Then Shay dragged himself to his feet and looked back in the direction of the vale. Nothing was moving either on the ground or in the air, and it appeared the brothers had gotten this far without being spotted. But they were still not out of the valley. Shay reached over and forcibly dragged Flick to his feet, pulling him along as he moved through the trees and began to ascend the steep valley slope. Flick followed wordlessly, no longer even thinking, but concentrating his ebbing willpower on putting one foot before the other. The eastern slope was rugged and treacherous, its surface a mass of boulders, fallen trees, prickly shrubbery, and uneven ground that made the climb a long and difficult one. Shay set the pace, moving over the large obstacles as fast as he could, while Flick followed in his footsteps. The young men scrambled and clawed their way up the slope. The sky began to grow lighter, and the stars disappeared altogether. Ahead of them, above the lip of the valley, the sun was sending its first faint glow into the night sky with tinges of orange and yellow that reflected vaguely the outline of the distant horizon. Shay was beginning to tire, his breath coming in short gulps as he stumbled on. Behind him, Flick forced himself to crawl, dragging his exhausted body after his lighter brother, his hands and forearms scratched and cut by the sharp brush and rocks. The climb seemed endless. They moved at a snail's pace over the rugged terrain, the fear of discovery alone forcing their tired legs to continue moving. If they were caught here, in the open, after all this effort... Suddenly, as they reached the three-quarter mark of their climb, Flick cried out sharply in warning and fell gasping against the slope. Shay whirled around fearfully, his eyes instantly catching sight of the huge black object that rose slowly from the distant veil. Climbing like a great bird into the dimness of the morning sunrise in widening spirals, the veilman dropped flat amid the rocks and brush, motioning his fallen brother to crawl quickly from sight and praying the creature had not seen them. They lay unmoving on the mountainside as the awesome bearer of the skull rose higher, its circle of flight growing wider, its path carrying it closer to where the brothers lay. A sudden, chilling cry burst from the creature, draining from the two young men the last faint hope that they might escape. They were gripped by the same unexplainable feeling of horror that had immobilized Flick, hidden in the brush with Al-Anon beneath the huge black shadow. Only this time, there was no place to hide. Their terror grew rapidly into the beginning stages of hysteria as the creature soared directly toward them, and in that fleeting moment, they knew they were going to die. But in the next instant, the black hunter wheeled in flight and glided north in an unaltering line, receding steadily into the horizon until it was lost from their sight. The veilmen lay petrified, buried in the scant brush and loose rock for endless minutes, afraid the creature would come winging back to destroy them the minute they tried to move. But when the terrible, unreasoning fear had ebbed away, they climbed shakenly to their feet, and in exhausted silence resumed the weary climb to the summit of the valley. It was a short distance to the lip of the rugged slope, and they hurried across the small, open field beyond to the concealment of the Dulne Forest. Within minutes they were lost in the great trees, and the rising morning sun in its first glow found the land that stretched back to the Vale Country silent and empty. The young men slowed their pace as they entered the Dulne, and finally Flick, who still had no idea where they were going, called ahead to Shay. "Why are we going this way?" he demanded. His own voice sounded strange after the long silence. "Where are we going anyway?" "Where Al-Anon told us. To the Anar. Our best chance is to go the way the Skullbearers least expect us to take. So we'll go east to the Black Oaks, and from there travel northward, and hope we can find help along the way." "Wait a minute," exclaimed Flick in sudden understanding. "What you mean is we're going east through Lee in hope Menyon can help us." "Are you completely out of your mind? Why don't we just give ourselves up to that creature? It would be quicker that way." Shay threw up his hands and turned wearily to face his brother. "We do not have any other choice. Menyon Lee is the only one we can turn to for help. He's familiar with the country beyond Lee. He may know a way through the Black Oaks."
"Oh, sure," nodded Flick gloomily. "Are you forgetting that he got us lost there last time? I wouldn't trust him any farther than I could throw him, and I doubt I can even lift him." "We have no choice," repeated Shay. "You didn't have to come on this trip, you know." he trailed off suddenly and turned away.
Sorry I lost my temper. But we have to do this thing my way, Flick.
He started walking again in dejected silence, and Flick followed glumly, shaking his head in disapproval. The whole idea of running away was a bad one to begin with, even though they knew that monstrous creature was prowling the valley. But the idea of going to Menyon Lee was worse still. That cocky idler would lead them right into a trap if he didn't get them lost first. Menyon was only interested in Menyon, the great adventurer, off on another wild expedition. The whole idea of asking him for help was ridiculous. Flick was admittedly biased. He disapproved of Menyon Lee and everything he represented. He had done so from the time they met 5 years earlier. The only son of a family that for centuries had governed the little Highland Kingdom, Menyon had spent his entire life involving himself in one wild escapade after another. He had never worked for a living, and as far as Flick could tell, he had never done anything worthwhile. He spent most of his time hunting or fighting, pursuits that hard-working Vailmen would consider idle recreation. His attitude was equally disturbing. Nothing about his life, his family, his homeland, or his country seemed to be of very great importance to him. The Highlander seemed to float through life very much the same as a cloud in an empty sky, touching nothing, leaving no trace of his passing. It was this careless approach to life that had nearly got them killed a year ago in the Black Oaks. Yet Shay was drawn to him. And in his flippant way, the Highlander seemed to respond with genuine affection. But Flick had never been convinced that it was a friendship he could depend upon, and now his brother proposed to entrust their lives to the care of a man who did not know the first thing about responsibility. He mulled the situation over in his mind, wondering what could be done to prevent the inevitable. Finally, he concluded that his best chance would be to watch Menyon carefully and warn Shay as tactfully as possible when he suspected they were doing the wrong thing. If he alienated his brother now, he would have no chance later of contradicting the bad advice of the Prince of Lee. It was late afternoon when the travelers finally reached the banks of the great Rappahalidran. Shay led the way down the riverbank for about a mile until they reached a place where the far bank cut toward them and the channel began to narrow considerably. Here they stopped and gazed across at the forests beyond. The sun would be down in another hour or so, and Shay did not want to be caught on the near bank that night. He would feel safer with the water between him and any pursuers. He explained to Flick, who agreed, and they set about making a small raft, using their hand axes and hunting knives. The raft was necessarily a small one, its only purpose to carry their packs and clothing. There was no time to construct a raft large enough to carry them, and they would have to swim the river, towing their belongings. They completed the job in short order, and stripping off their packs and clothes, tied them down in the middle of the raft and slipped into the chilling waters of the Rappahalidran. The current was swift, but not dangerous at this time of the year, the spring thaws having already passed. The only problem was finding a suitable landing place along the high banks of the other shore after their swim was over. As it happened, the current swept them along for almost half a mile as they struggled to tow the cumbersome raft, and when the crossing had finally been completed, they found they were close to a narrow inlet in the far bank that offered an easy landing. They scrambled out of the cold water, shivering in the early evening air, and after dragging the raft out after them, quickly dried off and dressed again. The entire operation had taken a little over an hour, and the sun was now lost from sight beneath the tall trees, leaving only a dull reddish glow to light the afternoon sky in the minutes that remained before darkness. The brothers were not ready to quit for the day, but Shay suggested they sleep for several hours to regain their strength
and then resume their journey during the night to avoid any chance of being seen. The sheltered inlet seemed safe, so they curled up in their blankets beneath a great elm and were quickly asleep. It was not until midnight that Shay woke Flick with a light shake, and they quickly packed their gear and prepared to resume their hike through the Dalm. At one point, Shay thought he heard something prowling about on the far shore and hurriedly warned Flick. They listened in silence for long minutes, but could detect nothing moving in the blackness of the massive trees, and finally concluded that Shay must have been mistaken. Flick was quick to point out that nothing could be heard anyway above the sound of the surging river, and the skull creature was probably still looking for them in the vale. His confidence had been bolstered considerably by the mistaken belief that they had momentarily outsmarted any pursuers. They walked until sunrise, trying to move in an easterly direction, but unable to see much from their low vantage point. Any clear view of the stars was masked by a confusing network of heavy branches and rustling leaves interlocked above them. When they finally stopped, they were still not clear of the Dalm, and had no idea how much farther they had to walk before reaching the borders of Lee. Shay was relieved at the appearance of the sun rising directly before them. They were still heading in the right direction. Finding a clearing nestled in a cluster of great elms sheltered on three sides by thick brush, the young men tossed down their packs and quickly fell asleep, totally exhausted from the strenuous flight. It was late afternoon before they awoke and began preparations for the night walk. Unwilling to start a fire that might attract attention, they contented themselves with munching on dried beef and raw vegetables, completing the meal with some fruit and a little water. As they ate, Flick again brought up the question of their destination. "Shay," he began cautiously, "I don't want to dwell on the matter, but are you sure this is the best way to go? I mean, even if Menyon wants to help, we could easily get lost in the swamps and hills that lie beyond the Black Oaks and never get out." Shay nodded slowly and then shrugged. "It's that, or go farther north where there is less cover and the country would be unfamiliar even to Menyon. Do you think we have a better choice?" "I suppose not," Flick responded unhappily. "But I keep thinking about what Al-Anon told us. You remember about not telling anyone and being careful about trusting anyone? He was very definite about that." "Let's not start that again," Shay flared up. "Al-Anon isn't here, and the decision is mine. I don't see how we can hope to reach the Anar forests without the help of Menyon. Besides, he's always been a good friend, and he's one of the finest swordsmen I have ever seen. We'll need his experience if we're forced to stand and fight." "Which we are certain to have to do with him along," Flick finished pointedly. "Besides, what chance do we have against something like that skull creature? Why, it would tear us to bits." "Don't be so gloomy," Shay laughed. "We aren't dead yet. Don't forget, we have the protection of the Elfstones." Flick was not particularly convinced by this argument, but felt that the whole matter was best left alone for the present. He had to admit that Menyon Lee would be a good man to have around in a fight, but at the same time he was not sure whose side the unpredictable fellow would decide to take. Shay trusted Menyon because of the instinctive liking he had developed for the flashy adventurer during trips to Lee with his father over the past few years. But Flick did not feel that his brother was entirely rational in his analysis of the Prince of Lee. Lee was one of the few remaining monarchies in the Southland, and Shay was an outspoken advocate of decentralized government, an opponent of absolute power. Nevertheless, he claimed friendship with the heir to a monarch's throne. Facts which, in Flick's opinion, seemed entirely inconsistent. Either you believed in something or you didn't. You couldn't have it both ways and be honest with yourself. The meal was finished in silence as the first shadows of evening began to appear. The sun had long since disappeared from view, and its soft golden rays had changed slowly to a deep red mingling with the green boughs of the giant trees. The brothers quickly packed their few belongings and began the slow, steady march eastward, their backs to the fading daylight. The woods were unusually still, even for early evening, and the wary Veilmen walked in uneasy silence through the shrouded gloom of the forest night, the moon a distant beacon that appeared only at brief intervals through the dark boughs overhead. Flick was particularly disturbed by the unnatural silence of the Dulm, a silence strange to this huge forest, but uncomfortably familiar to the stocky Veilmen. Occasionally they would pause in the darkness, listening to the deep stillness. Then, hearing nothing, they would quickly resume the tiring march, searching for a break in the forest ahead that would open onto the highlands beyond. Flick hated the oppressive silence, and once began whistling softly to himself, but was quickly stilled by a warning motion from Shay. Sometime during the early hours of the morning, the brothers reached the edge of the Dulm, and broke through into the shrub-covered grasslands that stretched beyond for miles to the highlands of Lee. The morning sun was still several hours away, so the travelers continued their journey eastward. Both felt immensely relieved to be free of the Dulm, away from the stifling closeness of its monstrous trees and from the unpleasant silence. They may have been safer within the concealing shadows of the forest, but they felt considerably better equipped to deal with any danger that threatened them on the open grasslands. They even began to speak again in low voices as they walked. About an hour before daybreak, they reached a small, brush-covered vale where they stopped to eat and rest. They were already able to see the dimly lighted highlands of Lee to the east, a journey of yet another day. Shay estimated that if they started walking again at sundown, they could easily reach their destination before another sunrise. Then, everything would depend on Menyon Lee. With this unspoken thought in mind, he quickly fell asleep. Only minutes passed, and they were awake again. It was not something moving that caused them to rise in sudden apprehension, but a deathly quiet that settled ominously over the grasslands. Immediately they sensed the unmistakable presence of another being. The feeling struck them at the same instant, and both came to their feet with a start, without a word, their drawn daggers gleaming in the faint light as they looked cautiously about their small cover. Nothing moved. Shay motioned his brother to follow as he crawled up the shrub-covered slope of the little vale to where they could view the land beyond. They lay motionless in the brush, peering into the early morning gloom, eyes straining to detect what lurked beyond. They did not question the fact that something was out there. There was no need. Both had known the feeling before the window of their bedroom. Now they waited, scarcely daring to breathe, wondering if the creature had found them at last, praying they had been careful enough to conceal their movements. It seemed impossible that they could be found now after their hard struggle to escape. Wrong that death should come when the safety of Lee was only a few hours away. Then with a sudden rush of wind and leaves, the black shape of the skull-bearer rose soundlessly from a long line of scrub trees far to their left. Its dim bulk seemed to rise and hang heavily above the earth for several long moments, as if unable to move, silhouetted against the faint light of an approaching dawn. The brothers lay flat against the edge of the rise, as silent as the brush about them, waiting for the creature to move. How it had tracked them this far, if indeed it had, they could only guess. Perhaps it was only blind luck that had brought them all together in this single, empty piece of grassland, but the fact remained that the Veilmen were hunted creatures and their death had become a very real possibility. The creature hung motionless against the sky a moment longer. Then slowly, sluggishly, the great wings reaching outward,
It began to move toward their place of concealment. Flick gave an audible gasp of dismay and sank farther back into the surrounding brush, his face ashen in the gray light, his hand gripping Shay's slim arm. But before reaching them, while still several hundred feet away, the creature dropped into a small grove of trees and was momentarily lost from sight. The brothers peered desperately in the hazy light, unable to see their pursuer. "Now," Shay's determined voice whispered urgently in his brother's ear, "while the creature can't see us, make for that line of brush ahead." Flick did not need to be told twice. Once the black monster finished with the trees that now occupied its attention, the next stop would be their hiding place. The Veilman scampered fearfully from his place of concealment, half running, half crawling along the wet morning grass, his tousled head jerking in quick glimpses over his shoulder, expecting the skull-bearer to rise any moment from the grove and spy him. Behind him ran Shay, his lithe body bent close to the ground as he darted across the open grassland, zigzagging his way silently behind his brother's stocky figure. They reached the brush without mishap, and then Shay remembered they had forgotten their packs. The packs that now lay at the bottom of the vale they had just left. The creature could not miss seeing them, and when it did, the chase would be over and there would be no more guessing which way they had gone. Shay felt his stomach sink. How could they have been so stupid? He grabbed Flick's shoulder in desperation, but his brother had also realized their error and slumped heavily to the ground. Shane knew he had to go back for the telltale packs, even if he were seen. There was no other choice. But even as he rose hesitantly, the black shape of the hunter appeared, hanging motionless in the brightening sky. The chance was gone. Once again, they were saved by the coming of dawn. As the skull-bearer poised silently above the grasslands, the golden rim of the morning sun broke from its resting place in the eastern hills and sent its first emissaries of the approaching day shooting forth to light the land and sky in their warm glow. The sunlight broke over the dark bulk of the night creature, and seeing that its time was gone, it rose abruptly into the sky, wheeling about the land in great, widening circles. It screamed its death-like cry with chilling hatred, freezing for one quick moment all the gentle sounds of morning. Then turning north, it flew swiftly from sight. A moment later it was gone, and two grateful, unbelieving Veilmen were left staring mutely into the distant, empty morning sky. Chapter 5. By late afternoon of that same day, the Veilmen had reached the highland city of Lee. The stone and mortar walls that bounded the city were a welcome haven to the weary travelers, even though the bright afternoon sun made their hot, dull gray mass appear as unfriendly as low-heated iron. The very size and bulk of the walls were repugnant to the Veilmen, who preferred the freedom of the more pregnable forest lands surrounding their own home. But exhaustion quickly pushed any dislikes aside, and they passed without hesitating through the west gates and into the narrow streets of the city. It was a busy hour, with people pushing and shoving their way past the small shops and markets that lined the entryway to the walled city and ran inward toward Menion's home. A stately old mansion screened by trees and hedges that bordered carefully manicured lawns and fragrant gardens. Lee appeared to be a great metropolis to the men of Shady Vale, though it was in fact comparatively small when one considered the size of the great cities of the deep Southland or even the border city of Tirsis. Lee was a city set apart from the rest of the world, and travelers passed through its gates only infrequently. It was self-contained, existing primarily to serve the needs of its own people. The monarchy that governed the land was the oldest in the Southland. It was the only law
that its subjects knew, perhaps the only one they needed. Shay had never been convinced of this, though the Highland people for the most part were content with the government and the way of life it provided. As the Vale men maneuvered their way through the crowds, Shay found himself reflecting on his improbable friendship with Menyn Lee. It would have to be termed improbable, he mused, because on the surface they seemed to have so little in common. Valeman and Highlander, with backgrounds so completely dissimilar as to defy any meaningful comparison. Shay, the adopted son of an innkeeper, hard-headed, pragmatic, and raised in the tradition of the working man. Menyn, the only son of the royal house of Lee and heir to the throne, born into a life filled with responsibilities he pointedly ignored, possessed of a brash self-confidence that he tried to conceal with only moderate success, and blessed with an uncanny hunter's instinct that merited grudging respect even from so severe a critic as Flick. Their political philosophies were as unlike as their backgrounds. Shay was staunchly conservative, an advocate of the old ways, while Menyn was convinced that the old ways had proved ineffective in dealing with the problems of the races. Yet for all their differences, they had formed a friendship that evidenced mutual respect. Menyn found his small friend to be anachronistic in his thinking at times, but he admired his conviction and determination. The Valeman, contrary to Flick's oft-expressed opinion, was not blinded to Menyn's shortcomings, but he saw in the Prince of Lee something others were inclined to overlook. A strong, compelling sense of right and wrong. At the present time, Menyn Lee was pursuing life without any particular concern for the future. He traveled a good deal. He hunted the Highland forests. But for the most part, he seemed to spend his time finding new ways to get into trouble. His hard-earned expertise with the longbow and as a tracker achieved no useful purpose. On the contrary, it merely served to aggravate his father, who had repeatedly but unsuccessfully attempted to interest his son and only heir in the problems of governing his kingdom. One day, Menyn would be a king, but Shay doubted that his light-hearted friend ever gave the possibility more than a passing thought. This was foolish, if somewhat expected. Menyn's mother had died several years ago, shortly after Shay had first visited the Highlands. Menyn's father was not an old man, but the death of a king did not always come with age, and many former rulers of Lee had died suddenly and unexpectedly. If something unforeseen should befall his father, Menyn would become king whether he was prepared or not. There would be some lessons learned then, Shay thought, and smiled in spite of himself. The Lee ancestral home was a wide, two-story stone building nestled peacefully amid a cluster of spreading hickories and small gardens. The grounds were screened away from the surrounding city by high shrubbery. A broad park lay directly across from a small walkway fronting the home, and as the Vale men crossed wearily to the front gates, children splashed playfully through a small pond at the hub of the park's several paths. The day was still warm, and people hurried past the travelers on their way to meet friends or to reach their homes and families. In the west, the late afternoon sky was deepening into a soft, golden haze. The tall iron gates were ajar, and the Vale men walked quickly toward the front door of the home, winding through the long stone walkway's high shrubbery and garden borders. They were still approaching the stone threshold at the front of the home when the heavy oak door opened from within, and there, unexpectedly, was Menyn Lee. Dressed in a multicolored cloak and vest of green and pale yellow, his lean, whip-like frame moved with the graceful ease of a cat. He was not a big man, though several inches taller than the Vale men, but he was broad through the shoulders and his long arms gave him a rangy look. He was on his way down a side path, but when he caught sight of the two ragged, dusty figures approaching along the main walk, he stopped short. A moment later, his eyes went wide with surprise. "Shay," he exclaimed sharply, "what in the name of all...
What happened to you?
He rushed over quickly to his friend and gripped the slim hand warmly.
Good to see you, Menyon, Shay said with a smile.
The Highlander stepped back a pace, and his gray eyes studied them shrewdly.
Never expected that my letter would get results this quickly.
He trailed off and studied the other's weary face.
It hasn't. Has it? But don't tell me. I don't want to hear it. I'd rather assume, for the sake of our friendship, that you came just to visit me. And brought distrustful old Flick, too, I see. This is a surprise.
He grinned quickly past Shay at the scowling Flick, who nodded curtly.
This wasn't my idea, you may be sure. I wish that our friendship alone were the reason for this visit.
Shay sighed heavily.
I wish I didn't have to involve you in any of this, but I'm afraid that we are in serious trouble and you are the one person who might be able to help us.
Menyon started to smile, then changed his mind quickly, as he caught the mood reflected in the other's drawn face, and nodded soberly.
Nothing funny about this, is there? Well, a hot bath and some dinner are the first order of business. We can discuss what brought you here later. Come on in. My father's engaged on the border, but I'm at your disposal.
Once inside, Menyon directed the servants to take charge of the Veilmen, and they were led off to a welcome bath and a change of clothes. An hour later, the three friends gathered in the great hall for a dinner that would ordinarily have fed twice their number, but on this night barely satisfied them. As they ate, Shay related to Menyon the strange tale behind their flight from Shady Vale. He described Flick's meeting with the mysterious wanderer Alanon and the involved story behind the Sword of Shannara. It was necessary, despite Alanon's order of secrecy, if he must ask Menyon's help. He told of the coming of Balinor with his terse warning, of their narrow escape from the black skull creature, and finally of their flight to the Highlands. Shay did all the talking. Flick was unwilling to enter into the conversation, resisting the temptation he felt to elaborate on his own part in the events of the past few weeks. He chose to keep quiet because he was determined not to trust Menyon. He was convinced that it would be better for the Veilmen if at least one of them kept his guard up and his mouth closed. Menyon Lee listened quietly to the long tale, evincing no visible surprise until the part about Shay's background, with which he appeared immeasurably pleased. His lean brown face remained for the most part an inscrutable mask, broken only by that perpetual half-smile and the small wrinkles at the corners of the sharp gray eyes. He recognized quickly enough why the Veilmen had come to him. They could never expect to make it from Lee through the lowlands of Cleet and from there through the Black Oaks without assistance from someone who knew the country. Someone they could trust. Correction, Menyon thought, smiling inwardly. Someone Shay could trust. He knew that Flick would never have agreed to come to Lee unless his brother had insisted. There had never been much of a friendship between Flick and himself. Still, they were both here, both willing to seek his help, whatever the reason, and he would never be able to refuse anything to Shay, even where there was risk to his own life. Shay finished his story and waited patiently for Menyon's response. The Highlander seemed lost in thought, his eyes fixed on the half-filled glass of wine at his elbow. When he spoke, his voice was distant.
The Sword of Shannara? I haven't heard that story in years. Never really believed it was true. Now, out of complete obscurity, it reappears with my old friend Shay Ohmsford as the heir apparent. Or are you?
His eyes snapped up suddenly.
You could be a red herring, a decoy for these Northland creatures to chase and destroy. How can we be sure about Alanon? From the tale you've told me, he seems almost as dangerous as the things hunting you. Perhaps even one of them. Flick started noticeably at this suggestion, but Shay shook his head firmly.
I can't bring myself to believe that. It doesn't make any sense.
Maybe not, continued Mennion slowly, inwardly musing over the prospect. Could be I'm getting old and suspicious. Frankly, this whole story is pretty improbable. If it's true, you are fortunate to have gotten this far on your own. There are a great many tales of the Northland, of the evil that dwells in the wilderness above the Strelaheim Plains. Power, they say, beyond the understanding of any mortal being.
He trailed off for a moment, then sipped gingerly at his wine.
The Sword of Shannara. Just the possibility that the legend might be true is enough to...
He shook his head and grinned openly.
How can I deny myself the chance to find out? You'll need a guide to get you to the NR, and I'm your man.
I knew you would be. Shay reached over and gripped his hand in thanks. Flick groaned softly, but managed a feeble smile.
Now then, let's see where we stand.
Mennion took charge quickly, and Flick went back to drinking wine.
What about these elf stones? Let's have a look at them.
Shay quickly produced the small leather pouch and emptied the contents into his open palm. The three stones sparkled brightly in the torchlight, their blue glow deep and rich.
Mennion touched one gently and then picked it up. They are indeed beautiful, he acknowledged approvingly. I don't know when I've seen their like. But how can they help us?
I don't know that yet, admitted the Veilman reluctantly. I only know what Alanon told us, that the stones were only to be used in emergencies, and that they were very powerful.
Well, I hope that he was right, snorted the other. I would hate to discover the hard way that he was mistaken. But I suppose we'll have to live with that possibility.
He paused for a moment and watched as Shay placed the stones back in the pouch and tucked the leather container into his tunic front. When the Veilman looked up again, he was staring blankly into his wine glass.
I do know something of the man called Balinor Shay. He is a fine soldier. I doubt we could find his equal in the whole of the Southland. We might be better off to seek the aid of his father. You would be better protected by the soldiers of Callahorn than by the forest-dwelling dwarfs of the Anar. I know the roads to Tirsis, all of them safe. But almost any path to the Anar will run directly through the Black Oaks. Not the safest place in the Southland, as you know.
Alanon told us to go to the Anar, persisted Shay. He must have had a reason. And until I find him again, I'm not taking any chances. Besides, Balinor himself advised us to follow his instructions.
Mennion shrugged. That's unfortunate, because even if we manage to get through the Black Oaks, I really don't know much about the land beyond. I'm told that it's relatively unsettled country all the way to the Anar forests. The inhabitants are mostly Southlanders and dwarfs, who should not prove dangerous to us. Cullhaven is a small dwarf village on the Silver River in the Lower Anar. I don't think we'll have much trouble finding it, if we get that far. First, we have to navigate the lowlands of Cleet, which will be especially bad with the spring thaws, and then the Black Oaks. That will be the most dangerous part of the trip.
Can't we find a way around? Shay asked hopefully.
Mennion poured himself another glass of wine and passed the decanter to Flick, who accepted it without blinking.
It would take weeks. North of Lee is the Rainbow Lake. If we go that way, we have to circle the entire lake to the north through the Rune Mountains. The Black Oaks stretch south from the lake for 100 miles. If we try to go south and come north again on the other side, it will take us at least 2 weeks. And that's open country all the way. No cover at all. We have to go east through the lowlands, then cut through the oaks.
Flick frowned, recalling how on their last visit to Lee, Menyon had succeeded in losing them for several days in the dreaded forest, where they were menaced by wolves and ravaged by hunger. They had barely escaped with their lives.
"Old Flick remembers the Black Oaks," laughed Menyon as he caught the other's dark expression.
"Well, Flick, this time we shall be better prepared. It's treacherous country, but no one knows it better than I do, and we aren't likely to be followed there. Still, we'll tell no one where we're going. Simply say that we are off for an extended hunting trip. My father has his own problems anyway. He won't even miss me. He's used to having me gone even for weeks at a time."
He paused for a moment and looked to Shay to see if he had forgotten anything. The Veilman grinned at the Highlander's undisguised enthusiasm.
"Menyon, I knew we could count on you. It will be good to have you along."
Flick looked openly disgusted, and Menyon, catching the look, could not allow the opportunity for a little fun at the other's expense to pass.
"I think we ought to talk for a minute about what's in this for me," he declared suddenly. "I mean, what do I get out of all this, if I do guide you safely to Cullhaven?"
"What do you get?" exclaimed Flick, without thinking. "Why should you—"
"That's all right," the other interrupted quickly.
"I had forgotten you, old Flick, but you don't need to worry. I don't intend to take anything from your share."
"What are you talking about, sly one?" raged Flick. "I did not mean ever to take anything."
"That's enough." Shay leaned forward, his face flushed.
"This cannot continue if we are to travel together. Menyon, you must cease your attempts to bait my brother into anger. And you, Flick, must put aside once and for all your pointless suspicions of Menyon. We must have some faith in one another, and we must be friends."
Menyon looked down sheepishly, and Flick was biting his lip in disgust. Shay sat back quietly as the anger drained out of him.
"Well spoken," acknowledged Menyon after a moment.
"Flick, here is my hand on it. Let us make a temporary truce, at least, for Shay." Flick looked at the extended hand, and then slowly accepted it.
"Words come easily for you, Menyon. I hope you mean them this time."
The Highlander accepted the rebuke with a smile.
"A truce, Flick."
He released the Veilman's hand and drained his wine glass. He knew he had convinced Flick of nothing. It was growing late now, and all three were eager to complete their plans and retire for the night. They quickly decided that they would leave early the following morning. Menyon arranged to have them outfitted with light